Wednesday, January 25th, 2012. I'm Jordy Morgan. Welcome to Maritime Morning. Prime Minister Stephen Harper and National Chief Sean Attleo both spoke of a renewed relationship yesterday at the Crown First Nations Gathering in Ottawa. Chris Warkentin is the chair of the Aboriginal Affairs Committee. He's also the member of Parliament for Peace River. We're going to talk with him about what was accomplished at yesterday's summit. If anything, there was lots of smiles and patting of backs, but what does it really mean? Richard Zarowski is going to be joining us in just a moment or so, actually in about 25 minutes with the Science Files, and we're going to take your questions as well as talk a little bit about the science behind brining. Brining the roads. How do you think it's worked so far in terms of snow removal? We'll also talk about sunspot activity, which should have some remarkable effect on the northern lights. I don't know what else it's going to do, but we'll have some pretty skies for a while. And we'll, as I said, take your questions. But first, it may be one of Canada's dirtiest little food secrets. It's banned in the United States, but Canada still slaughters horses, as does Mexico. Much of the meat from horse slaughter goes into food for human consumption in Europe and Asia. But is the Canadian Food Inspection Agency really doing its job to ensure that the killing is both humane and the meat is not full of banned substances before it is shipped off? Vickery Eckhoff is the author of a series that appeared in Forbes.com, and it raises some serious ethical issues about horse slaughter in this country. Vickery Eckhoff joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I first read the piece that you wrote back in December that dealt with the investigation that is really sounding some alarms about animal cruelty and about food safety due to it was basically around a video that was released by the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition. So I'd like to back up a little bit and talk about your first exposure to this video. It was shot at a horse processing facility in Quebec. What can you tell me about that video and what it showed you?
Well, first, I hope you don't mind if I call it a horse slaughter facility instead of horse processing, because horse processing is the term that is used by people within the industry who do not want normal citizens to understand what goes on there. But what goes on there is slaughter. So I became aware of the videos right about the time they were about to be released, and I watched them. I've watched many horse slaughter videos over the past year, and I was aware that this was a facility that had been designed by Temple Grandin, or at least aspects of it had.
Okay, I want to pause there for a moment. Temple Grandin is somebody who is renowned for the work that she has done in terms of more humane methods for slaughter of animals.
That's correct. She has done a lot of research into what she calls humane methods for cattle, and has been brought in as a consultant for certain facilities. I can't speak to how many, but there is a facility that she had been a consultant on, and that was the focus of this undercover video from the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition.
It was a video that was actually shot from within the what they call the kill box, and it goes down and it shows how these animals are stunned. And I guess we have to describe what happens here is that the animal is brought into a what they call the kill box. Its head is put into a device which is meant to secure it, and then a bolt gun is supposed to be shot into it to stun it to the point that it will be able to be then hung up and bled out in order to complete the slaughtering process, correct?
Yes, but the slaughter boxes, and particularly the kill box that was the focus of this investigation, by Dr. Grandin's admission, appeared to be one that was designed for cattle. And it's very important to distinguish between things that are designed for cattle and for horses, because horses have such a different response to the activities connected with slaughter. So the kill boxes that the horses were put in were apparently cattle boxes, and they were too wide. So it's a little bit of, it's not quite correct to say that this is something that will secure the horse. The horse is a flight animal as opposed to cows. Cows will stand more complacently, which means it's easier to place the stun gun on its head. And horses are instinctively flight animals, so they thrash.
Mm-hmm.
And in a wider kill box, they have room to thrash. And because the floors in this particular facility were slippery, the horses were not only thrashing, but slipping and falling.
Was this facility designed for cattle or designed for horses?
Well, apparently, I'd have to go back and check. It obviously was designed for cattle, and perhaps there was some modification that they made for to slaughter horses. But in any event, this particular facility was doing both.
And it wasn't doing a particularly good job in terms of the regulations that are supposed to be in place for humane slaughter, as I understand it. That what happened was it was taking multiple shots to the head for these horses, that there was an inordinate amount of suffering, and there seemed to be an inordinate amount of awareness on behalf of the horses of what was going on.
Yes, and as I watched this particular one with Dr. Grandin, she was critical of several aspects of this, one of which was the non-slip floor and the handling of the stun gun by apparently untrained workers. And, under the best of circumstances, you could still have a horse that is stunned, without thrashing around a lot. But because of the positioning of their brain within the skull, which is further back, even under optimal circumstances, horses can regain consciousness. In this particular instance, the horses were slipping, falling, and thrashing. So you had multiple instances of stunning. And, to call it stunning is a bit of a mild term. This is a gun that will send a bolt into the skull. And the humane regulation is that this should be accomplished on one shot.
And what it should do is it should and I think the regulation says it should render the animals insensible to pain. It basically puts them out so that when they're shackled and hoisted and cut, that they're not aware of obviously what's going on to them.
Yes.
And the evidence that was shown was that wasn't really the case at all.
That was not the case. That there were horses that received. One horse in particular was shot 11 times in the head, and it could be overheard on the video track that the worker had said, "Oh, you won't die." Well, when I spoke to Dr. Grandin, and I asked her whether or not 11 shots to the head was by definition inhumane according to the regulation. And it certainly appears that way. To other veterinarians and experts who have looked at the videos, they were highly critical of the number of times that the horses were being shot. Mm.
One would think, and I'm certainly not an expert in the area, but one would think that if a horse was being put down in this fashion, that it would not be, I mean, anybody who hunts knows that, something like this would do, the kind, fear and the hormones that are being released and whatnot, that it's not going to be particularly good for the state of the flesh after the animal's killed.
Correct. And a stress-free environment, aside from being the most humane thing for the horse, a stress-free environment and, of course, a single shot that effectively puts the horse into an unconscious state is optimal for the horse and also for the meat. And I understand that carcasses are worth less if there is a stressed out animal. So this would seem to violate both premises of a humane death and also stress-free meat.
I'm speaking with Vickery Eckhoff. She is a contributor to Forbes.com as a journalist and has written a series on horse slaughter investigating at one Canadian facility that has come under a considerable amount of criticism. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to come back and talk about some of the legislation that we're seeing around this in the United States, that there is a debate that is emerging there about the reinstitution of horse slaughter. It has been banned in the United States. How it has been banned, what the changes are, and what that means for Canada. Plus, we're going to talk about what we know about the drugs that are actually in these horses and what we know about these horses that are going to these slaughter facilities for food. We'll take a quick break and be back in a moment here on Maritime Morning. Welcome back to Maritime Morning. We are talking about horse slaughter in Canada, and it's a practice that is banned in the United States and has been for some time. They still slaughter horses in Mexico, and we get horses here in Canada from the United States for slaughter. Now, whatever your opinions are on the humane killing of animals, what is more disturbing about all of this is the things that we that may be in the meat that is being sold and shipped in this country. We have obviously a stream of horses coming into these facilities, but where are they coming from? Are they coming from racetracks? Are they coming from people's homes? There is not that much in terms of purpose-bred food agriculture of horses. So you're not finding that they're we're breeding horses for meat. Most of the time, these horses are coming from other areas, and it's disturbing. We're talking with Vickery Eckhoff. She's a contributor to Forbes magazine, who wrote a piece about this back in December. We've posted it on our Facebook page as well, if you'd like to have a look at it. The food safety issues are the ones that I find particularly troubling here, Vickery. And give us a sense of where these horses are coming from, these ones that are going to slaughter.
Well, they're coming from a number of areas. 16% of them are thoroughbreds. Many of these are barely off the track, the racetrack. 70%, I believe, are quarter horses. Many of these horses, or aside from the racehorses, have all been used for riding in some respect. And I believe the data shows that the average age of the horses shipped to slaughter is between 6 and 10 years old. They have been found to be healthy horses, by and large. I think the statistics say that 85% of the horses, or perhaps 90% of the horses, are in that age range and extremely healthy. A lot of the horses are as I mentioned, former riding horses, working horses, sport horses. And, you know, the U.S. does not raise horses for food. Horses are used for a lot of different sporting events. And, you know, because of the economy, they're expensive animals to maintain. A lot of people, as they have lost their homes to foreclosure, have also given up pets, and not just, you know, horses, but dogs and cats. So the horses that are sold at auction come from people's backyards. They come from camps. A lot of camps that use horses in the summer let go of them in the fall and over the winter, so they don't have to pay for them. Feed is expensive. Some of them are PMU foals, and those are the foals that are produced by the Premarin industry, which impregnates mares and collects their urine for use in hormone therapy for women. Some of these foals are nurse mare foals, which are foals that are bred to create a lactating mare who can then provide food to perhaps a newly born thoroughbred foal whose mother is being rebred to create more thoroughbreds. So they come from a wide range of sources.
Now, many of these horses that are being used, or pleasure horses or track horses, are treated with an anti-inflammatory drug called phenylbutazone. It's also known as bute. Most people in the horse industry know this. It's akin to Tylenol. Horses, as any athlete would take Tylenol because for a variety of reasons, whether it's strains or muscle inflammation, whatever it might be, it's a human carcinogen. What kind of records do these horses have with them in terms of the use of drugs that, whether or not they've been injected with these drugs through their life?
Well, I think there are two things to look at here. One, of course, is what kind of records exist, and the second thing is who's filling out the records. Horses that race, if you look at racing records for racetracks, there will be a column that shows medication usage, and bute will be indicated there. I believe the figure is 99% of racehorses get bute on race day and in advance of race day. So for racehorses, there's pretty good documentation at the track. Of course, vets, aren't always the ones that administer bute. Owners can administer it to pleasure horses. For example, my sister gave her horse bute a week ago because he had an inflammation from a cut. So the horses that end up at auction don't travel there with medication records. They show up there most of the time and without even halters on. The halters are stripped off the horses to make them seem anonymous. Even the registered ones that are tattooed and identifiable through jockey club databases are oftentimes not readily identified at auction. So the idea that these horses are tracked at every point of their journey from the racetrack or the show stable or the backyard to the slaughterhouse is really, that's not true.
And it should be noted that bute is, even a single dose in any animal that's sold for meat, is banned by the European Union, the FDA, the USDA, right. And it's certainly not the only drug that horses are getting. So it would seem that we do not have an effective tracking mechanism to determine whether or not these horses actually have these drugs in them.
That's correct. And, it's important for listeners to understand that all of the paperwork that is supposed to help this is filled out by the individuals, the kill buyers, who buy the horses at auction and ship them to slaughter. And that's pretty much akin to telling travelers at the airport, you don't have to pass through airport security, just fill out a little document in what's in your suitcase and hand it in, and you're good to go. So in this particular instance, the documentation that would be required by APHIS, the ownership certificates are filled out by the kill buyers, and in terms of CFIA and the EU, the equine information documents that are supposed to be used to identify the horse in terms of age, health, markings, drug use, are filled out by the kill buyers. So the kill buyers are on an honor system to fill out all this paperwork, and I think you can pretty much imagine that it is not in their interest to spend a lot of time on this, and they don't have the information to put into these documents.
My understanding is that the United States is now looking at reinstating inspection for horse slaughter in plants there, so that it may be reinstituted in the United States in spite of an enormous amount of public pressure not to do that. Is that the case?
Yes, it is. On November 18th, President Obama and the U.S. Congress signed an agricultural appropriations bill that had language stripped out of it. So, the means by which this is coming about, it's not through, it wasn't outright banned in 2007 when the last U.S. slaughterhouses were closed. What happened was that language was inserted into a bill that said that funding would no longer be provided by the USDA for these slaughterhouses, and that prevented them from operating. There were some other events that also worked in tandem with this in shutting them down, but in essence, it was that removal of funding for inspections that shut the slaughterhouses down. So back on November 18th, three congressmen took that language out of the bill, and rather than see a government shutdown over not signing the bill, it was signed. So it's, you know, it might appear that the president and Congress is in favor of this, but in fact they signed the bill under a certain amount of pressure, and the language taking out the ban on funding was part of that approval.
Well, we'll keep our eye on that. It's quite a story. It's not one that I don't think most Canadians can be particularly proud of in terms of what we're doing here, but we're hoping to talk with someone from the CFIA tomorrow to see what kind of regulations are in place to control that, if any. Vickery Eckhoff, thanks very much. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jordy.
Vickery Eckhoff is a journalist who writes for Forbes magazine. We'll take a break and be back in just a couple of minutes here on Maritime Morning.